my friend, well, I'm left here to listen. I hear you calling his name, I hear the stutter of ignition. I could hear you whispering as I crept by your door, so you found some other joker who could please you. Why I'm not angry, I'm not angry no more. I'm not angry, I'm not angry no more. I know what you're doing.
Okay, folks, this is Eric Mack with Liberally Correct, episode number 4. Along with Brett Madsen, as always, from Philadelphia. How are you today, Brett?
I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah.
What are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about the media and all
That's
its
a pretty big topic.
Suckiness. Oh, you want us to go? Oh, I was thinking we could just end the show right there.
Okay.
That's the only depth we need right there. It's just we need to just
the media.
We
sucks.
Need to say,
Everyone agrees.
Say the media, yes. Okay, so the song you just heard was I'm Not Angry by Elvis Costello.
We're not.
From his first album. My Aim Is True, great album, one of the best albums of all time, wouldn't you say, Brett?
I would say. Also released the year that Star Wars came out, so it was not a bad year for pop culture. Just throwing that out there.
Well, there was disco, but okay.
okay.
So let's get into the media. I've been basically sitting around for like almost 2 years waiting to just slam the media on some form. This is media, so I'm slamming the media on a podcast, which is technically the media as well.
So that's important. That's one thing I wanted to talk about immediately. What do you mean when you say the media?
Yes.
What do we talk about when we talk about?
Yeah, that is something that sort of pisses me off a little bit, because each side blames the media, but they both mean different things when they say the media. Yes, I totally agree with the importance of your question.
All right, so what do you think the media means?
Well, to me, there are legitimate media operations. If you actually report facts, and I suppose you don't have to have careful analysis and opinion. It helps to do so. You can just be reporters, I suppose. That would be a news organization that I would trust if they have reporters reporting facts. And if there is if there's some kind of editorial oversight or some kind of editorial review, and if there are actual consequences for reporting something that is not factual, if there's some kind of standard, let's see.
Okay, so that's a news organization.
I would even consider Fox News or a legitimate news organization, even though they suck, because they do reporting, and that's fair. I think some of the people
and there is an editorial process, right? They have a similar tone. They're pretty much after the same things. They will provide a weird version of the facts, but they rarely trade outright in conspiracy theories. It's been a long time since I've straight watched Fox News. But yeah, I have to say, unfortunately, they are an actual reporting organization.
Yeah, whereas something like Breitbart, which I had never heard of until this past summer.
I had. I'm surprised you hadn't. Okay. I'm on all the message boards.
Do I look like I'm part of the alt-right?
You could be a white supremacist. You're white.
That's true. Well, so
that's a
well,
start.
So are you?
Okay.
Why did you just say that you were familiar with Breitbart?
Because I post prolifically on their message boards. I have the username White Power Cock number one, then a bunch of exclamation points. So it's important. It's important for the people to know.
That's important work you're doing there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Every weird story your uncle's got, he got from me. So you're welcome, Earth.
Oh, man. Okay. Now, what is your definition of the media?
Well, okay, so I'm going to go a little wide here. One of the things that always bothers me about it is that
I gave you the definition of news organization when you asked me what the media is.
It's a weird term because media can be basically anything that's audio or visual.
Yes.
So a picture is media. This podcast is definitely media. Yeah, a song is a piece of media. I should have done more research before this one. I actually don't know like the origins of the word or exactly how we arrived at this current definition. But broadly speaking, in English, you can call those things pieces of media. So how we got to consider the media just news organizations that we don't like, but still expect to do a valuable job, I guess, for free. We'll get to that later. Yeah, I don't know how that definition came about. So when most people say the media, they mean, I suppose, news organizations. And, well, that's something we're going to have to talk about more, because you said you think that any news organization is one that has, any true news organization is one that has a reporting process. What is that? Because I don't think most of us know anymore. We just see things on the internet, and you sort of judge by font if it's a trustworthy site or not. Like, we're basically just judging fonts, I think. That's how it goes.
I mean, I have a cousin who's currently a reporter for a newspaper in Utah. Hello, the Logan Herald.
That would be really bad if you muff the call out.
Yes.
Shout out to my boys at the
Logan Herald has us on their radar. So, I think he writes on average about 10 articles a week. And last I talked to him about his kind of process, and he has to, you know, interview people, take down, you know, it's like being a detective or an investigator. I mean, you have to just find out what happened, put together a narrative that encapsulates what happened, and then also more or less make it interesting. That's sort of your responsibility as a storyteller, to help the publication you work for make money from selling interesting information to others.
Interesting information. That's hard, because I'm sure we'll get into this again later, but most information that we need is not very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm so glad, like, it wasn't my job to develop penicillin. I'm like, oh yeah, we have that. It's cool. I'm human, so I get the penicillin too. Even though I had nothing to do with that. Don't understand how it works. Just, you know, fuck polio. Fun to be alive in 2016.
Yeah, let's just be honest. There's like maybe two or three dozen like scientists that we pretty much all owe our lives to.
I think that's not entirely true. We owe them for those breakthroughs, but for actually taking important discoveries, there's a small, very, very small, maybe not an army, but a small brigade of scientists in every era that's taking this important information and actually turning it into the products that we use in our lives to keep us alive. Yay, science. Hey, that's actually a decent segue, because one of the things that I always think of when I think about what reporting actually is, as someone who doesn't do it, is that it's a process. Like, when you think about what science actually is, science is a process. Reporting is a very similar process. It's necessarily more descriptive. So there's no such thing as like absolutely true reporting, but it's the same idea. You need to know this information and present it. Well, how do you know it, and how do you present it?
There's no hypothesis at the beginning.
That's true. That's true.
No, it's a different kind of hypothesis. It's more like, well, I've got this
hypothesis provided to you by the people.
Yes, I've got this lead on a story. Yes. So yeah, I guess you're right. The hypothesis is provided by whoever feeds you the lead.
By the earth.
Yes.
Yours is like, here, this car is in the side of a building. Do you want to know why? It's like a choose your own adventure. But if you're doing it right, it's a constant testing of your idea against other ideas. And I suppose quite like the sciences, you often will find something inconclusive or that doesn't work. So this car smashed into a building. What happened? We asked the police chief. He was on the scene slow. Why were you on the scene slow? He says it's not a big deal, but it turns out that the person in the car knew the police chief personally. How was he not on the scene? And it might turn out, well, maybe there's some big conspiracy, or maybe he just didn't know about it, and it's a wacky coincidence that he knew the person in the car. Right? One of those two. End of story for today. You go to a certain point and you can't necessarily clamp down. But I mean, that's true in the sciences too. You test your idea against whatever you can come up with to test it against, and it works or it doesn't. And if you think it works, other people have to test it too, which is another thing that happens in true reporting. If you come up with something and it looks a little fishy, well, then another good reporting organization will take up that story, especially if people are already interested in it, and say, well, why is this so? This fact looks weird. This interview looks like it was conducted oddly. That's
right. And like the example I'm thinking of off the top of my head is the Notre Dame football player Manti Te'o, who oh god, that's pretty sad and hilarious. Sorry, Manti Te'o. Yeah, he basically,
he's making more than either of us will ever make. So last laughs on him.
Did he win the Heisman or was he just a finalist?
He was just a finalist. I don't think he won.
Yeah, I mean, he was a finalist for the Heisman Trophy. Defensive linebacker? Is that what he was?
Yeah, he was a linebacker.
At Notre Dame, really good college player. I think he's playing for like San Diego now in the
NFL.
Yeah,
last I heard.
But he convinced everyone like around the time of the Heisman that, or maybe it was earlier in the season, I can't remember now. This was like 5 years ago. That his girlfriend and his grandmother died on the same day Notre Dame was due to play somebody, and they ended up winning. And it was like the story on the broadcast of the game, which was, you know, nationally televised, as all Notre Dame games are. And then Deadspin did a report like a month later, you know, actually looking into, because apparently his girlfriend was like his quote unquote girlfriend was a student at Stanford. And nobody had done the simple fact check of calling Stanford and asking if there was ever a girl by the name of, was it Lene Kekua? I think that was her name, supposedly.
Oh, wow. That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, here you bring up an interesting point, because that takes a weird sort of person to wonder about that. Normally, if a guy says, yeah, I have a long distance girlfriend, you say, well, college is weird, and that's it. You're like, well, why, if you're a star linebacker, why would you want a long distance girlfriend? But okay, people do things. And that's where you'd leave it. You just sort of trust that guy. So it takes a weird sort of person to be like, I'm going to call the Stanford admissions department and see what's up.
Well, in Manti Te'o's case, I think he's a Mormon. So I don't think he was, you know, banging girls on the side.
Boys, maybe. Oh, leaving that open. Okay. Hey, he's a football player.
It's, yeah. Okay. We'll keep it to that. Yeah. Okay. So that's what we think of journalism. Is there anything else you want to add there?
I want to add, you never finished the story. The girlfriend was completely fake. He was scammed by some dude in Hawaii.
Sorry. I forgot. Yeah. I just assumed like everyone else knew the rest of the story. But yeah.
Well, we told this much of it. This is an awesome story.
It was journalism
at its finest and silliest. my favorite part about that whole story, which has nothing to do with the rest of this podcast, is the shirts that you will still see around with the Notre Dame logo. They're probably very, very illegal, but with the Notre Dame logo, the clover, and that say, play like your fake girlfriend died today.
Oh, that's awesome.
Still my favorite thing in college football. Okay. Anyway, the media.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about the media for a long time. We just had about a 15-minute...
You sound like you're threatening our listeners.
Yeah, we just had about a 15-minute preamble there to our constitution on the media. And we're going to approximately divide this into thirds. First third, we're going to be talking about social media. Then we're probably going to talk about TV. And then lastly, print, if we haven't exhausted all the topics during the crossover. So we wanted to talk about social media first, simply just because it's kind of impossible to avoid. If we had talked about TV or print to start with, we would have inevitably gone into social media at some point. And in many ways, social media is kind of the lead story, if I'm being journalistic here.
Well, it has to be because...
No reaction there? I mean, okay.
Oh, no, this is my reaction. I'm leaving the pun go. That I'm not touching. Yeah. But it has to be the lead story because the president-elect of the United States, the person who's going to be the most powerful man in the world shortly, or close to it, we hope he's like the third most powerful, that person communicates almost exclusively through Twitter.
Yes.
Which is a sentence that I don't know if you could even imagine it when Twitter started. Oh, yeah, the guy we elected president will only talk to us through this service. And it's kind of normal at this point. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's how we do it. Yep.
Yeah.
We have to talk about it.
Yes. So I happen to think Twitter is a huge accomplishment, personally. I know I've had conversations both with you and my brother, two of the smartest people I know, who have each said, I don't get Twitter. Like, what's the point of Twitter? Like, I don't understand what you're supposed to do with it or whatever. And
so educate me. What's the point of Twitter?
So obviously, Facebook came along first and was monumental because it lets you keep in touch with and keep tabs on may or may not be a good thing. All the people you know who are in your life in this kind of
weird, and all the people that you used to know. Okay, sorry.
And nowadays, Facebook is incredibly useful as a business tool, since everybody's been sharing information about themselves into this database that you can now, through advertising, basically just it's insane what you can do with the Facebook advertising in terms of collecting data on whatever market you're going after. But
yeah, Facebook to me is the story of somebody opening a pool filled. No, wait, let me go back. They open the pool. They say, does everybody want to swim? It's hot out. It's completely free. Everyone's like, sure, I'd like to go for a swim. Turns out it's the hottest party in town. Everybody's at this pool. It's cool. They come up with other features. It's like, hey, we got free drinks at the pool too. We got a DJ. It's an amazing pool party. And then suddenly there's like disgusting algae in the pool. And there are weird dudes just hanging around staring at you all the time. And everyone's like, oh, but we still want to swim. So all anybody does now is they complain about the algae, but no one actually leaves the party because it's all they know to do with themselves. That's what I feel Facebook is at this point.
Yes. Like when the Snowden thing came out, I mean, I was kind of like, well, where have you been? I mean, like, people have been collecting data on you. And by people, I mean companies, Google, Facebook.
That we voluntarily handed
yes,
over.
Yes, we voluntarily hand over information about ourselves. It's like, where have you guys been? Like, how are you not aware of this process? But right, that's another topic of conversation. So first came Facebook. The major achievement, if I had to break it down into a sentence, is it lets you keep track of what all of the people who are in your life are doing. And it sort of, obviously they introduced the news feed thing while we were in college. So that's what I would say Facebook.
Remember the early version of that?
Yes.
The news feed? Like, who would have thought it would become this? Where it was just sort of like, okay, so my cousin went to the mall. Why is it telling me that?
Yeah. And well, to put this in the context of the media, so we were freshmen in high school. I don't think you were on Facebook at the time. You're not on Facebook now.
I'm not on Facebook now. I was on Facebook from 2008 to 2010. Oh, wait, no, I do have a ghost Facebook account. I have one where every time I try and log back in, they make me send my passport because they think I'm faking my login.
Passport?
No, this is real. Because I have no activity on there.
Oh. Okay.
They make me send them a picture of my passport, which I now have saved on my computer, with all the sensitive information blocked out. Just picture that's probably me that looks like a U.S. passport, I guess. I don't know what they're trying to verify with all the sensitive numbers blocked out. But anyway, they make me send that to them and they'll unlock my account. I have one for my dormant band and I have one that I use for Tinder because Tinder doesn't let you operate without a Facebook. So it's just like it's literally no information, no connections, as private as you can make it. I don't remember the login right now, and it just has six pictures of me. That's it.
Wow.
So that's my Facebook activity. So I haven't actually been doing anything on Facebook since 2010, I think.
Yeah. So to put this in proper context, the newsfeed feature came out, I believe, in the fall of 2006. And I remember there was just this explosion because Facebook was very static at the time in the sense that, you know, people posted stuff to their page or profile, but Facebook was not sort of, you know, keeping track of the information and then throwing it in your face. That was sort of a first. And then when people saw that, like, there was this feed, which nobody had ever seen before, like anything like it, really. This like sort of real-time feed that was like just sending information about your profile that you were, you know, any updates you were doing to on your profile was just sending it out to other people that you know. And I can understand from Mark Zuckerberg's perspective, like, why would people be upset about this? Like, they signed up for this and I thought the whole point was, you know, to share information. But
why are people upset about the information sharing?
Yeah. And it's this concept that people have this idea of privacy when it's like this false privacy. But they really feel like that they are, because they're sitting in their house with, you know, alone in a room, that they have privacy on the internet. It's kind of a weird thing for me. But that story just blew up. And then it found its way, because I remember going to the CNN website, and there was actually a link to an article about it. And that was like the first time I'd ever seen a story about Facebook in the like national news.
In this, the media?
This is fall of 2006. So this was 10 years ago. Like, that's how far this has come in 10 years. And because it was only college kids at the time who were on Facebook.
Isn't it funny that this is where it's come when two years ago, you started seeing a bunch of stories about people aren't really engaging with Facebook, Twitter is pretty static. That's kind of it. People are looking for like the next social network, looking for the new hip young thing. And yeah, it turned out that they had become in those 10 years since Facebook started, I guess 8 years at the time, not since Twitter started. They became so integral to people's daily lives that it turned out when something actually important happened, like I'm going to say 407 month long presidential election, it was all on Facebook. It was all on Twitter. Those things suddenly became wildly important again, they became apparently indispensable, even though they had been for some time.
The thing that changed across the internet about 5 years ago, it's happened over the past 5 years, is now on every web page you go to, there are the share links, right? Those were not there 5 years ago. Those have only just started. That just started appearing about, you know, 5-6 years ago.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So
I guess so. You would basically copy paste. Man, it's been a long time, but you basically copy paste.
Yeah.
And then send like a messenger, post it on your wall or something, and say, please click on this. But you wouldn't actually share it to another person's account directly.
You could. You could put it on their wall.
But it was relatively manual.
Yeah, I mean,
by the standards of pointing and clicking.
It didn't automatically, you know, pop up this image with a preview of the link, you know, of the article or whatever that it does now automatically.
Ooh.
So that was a huge shift about 5 years ago. So that's Facebook. And now Twitter, when that came along, I just sort of didn't see the point of it. I was like, what's the point of saying something in 140 characters? Like, I don't get like what the
I
point
still don't
of it
understand.
Is.
I know why Trump likes it, because it cuts him off about the end of his like capacity for holding words in his brain. But I don't know why smart people also sometimes like it.
So the reason why I mean, I use Twitter pretty much every day. Not necessarily to I don't really write things anymore. I retweet a lot of things. But essentially what it lets you do is it basically put the RSS thing out of business. So RSS was the real simple syndication thing with the orange.
Oh yeah, curved lines. The dot surrounded by two curved lines, right?
Yeah. It was like two or three, I forget which. But basically how that used to work.
It looks like the Wi-Fi signal, essentially.
Yeah. So except it was like slanted to the right. So yeah, I mean how it used to work before there were the social share buttons is everybody subscribed to a site through the RSS thing, and then that would create a feed that would consist of all the sites that you had sort of gone to and added to your RSS reader. And so
do you happen to know when RSS reader was like popular, when it reached its peak? Because it was certainly never as mainstream as simply having
share.
Yeah,
it was basically late 2000s.
Okay.
And then what happened is Twitter came and replaced it, because Twitter's just a lot more efficient, right? So with the RSS thing, every time there would be a new post on the site or a new podcast episode or whatever, it would add it to your feed. But Twitter was just so much more efficient, because you can follow, you know, hundreds or thousands of accounts of people, of anybody or anything that you're interested in. And then it puts it like just fire, 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 you know, just one story after another in your Twitter feed. Right. So it's like, it's just like a whole, like once you have that and you're used to getting your news through that, it's sort of hard to go back to this sort of old way of doing it. Like I can't imagine like picking up a newspaper and, you know, flipping through that. I mean,
I still like newspapers. I mean, I understand why they're gone, but
yeah,
well, they're gone for me. I mean, you see them in other parts. So I'm in Philadelphia now, newly, as we mentioned at the start of our show. And in my 2.5, sneaking up on 3 months here, 2.5 months here, it's a really blue collar town, and there are things here that just didn't happen in my life previously. And one of them is newspapers, especially if you go out in the burbs. Like, you'll just see the Inquirer around. I didn't know they still printed that. I thought I was done.
My parents only just stopped getting the newspaper, the Washington Post.
Yeah, I mean, unlike you, I actually miss it. I like it for a lot of entirely sentimental reasons.
Well, I like the newspaper too, but it's sort of more of a nostalgia thing because...
Yeah, for me too.
But now that I have Twitter, I get all my updates in real time. Whereas the newspaper, it's all literally yesterday's news. That just doesn't appeal to me. I mean, yes, you get something a lot more comprehensive, but it's like in today's world, I'm not willing to. It's almost like things are sort of moving too fast in order to like sit down and actually go through the whole thing. You know, that's part of the thing we need to talk about, actually. But yeah.
Well, and this is where I'm an old man. I don't think the world's moving faster. I think all these services and devices that we're constantly hooked to give us the impression that there are new things going on when it's simply the same amount of stuff. We just get alerted about it constantly.
True.
And essentially all of it is useless. Like when you got the newspaper and it was yesterday's news, you would think about what happened yesterday. You'd have some distance from it. Most of the time, it won't affect your day-to-day life, or it might in a little bit, and you maybe be concerned about it, think about it. If you're particularly civically involved, you might like call a congressman, maybe even run for office yourself eventually. But you know, it gave you time to read what happened yesterday, go about your life during that day in which you just wouldn't know a lot of the other things in the world, and then start again the next day. Now, I'm not saying I want to go back to that exactly, simply because it could be very dangerous to have the ability to share all this information and not like it could be very dangerous for a government to say this is the better way where you know less. But I wish more of us just knew less. Not knew fewer important things, just knew less useless stuff. I think it's making us panic all the time.
Yeah, well, when everybody was getting the same paper, you know, in a town, and there was everybody was reading a paper with, you know, editorial oversight and an editorial review board for everything. And, you know, there was more of a common American experience, or shared American experience, I should say.
Well, and a more commonly reported American experience, too.
This is something we've lost, and it's pretty much due to social media. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, well, there's right as soon as I waxed nostalgic for a little bit and then called us all to not constantly panic all the time, there is one of the very good things about social media, which I mostly disdain. You would not see stories like, hey, police shoots guy in face. Guy is black. This happened 4 times last week. You wouldn't see that sort of thing previously. It wouldn't really get reported on because the beat reporter would be white. The cop wouldn't really say anything about it. And you just kind of assume, well, you know, he had to shoot some guy. It's terrible, but the dude had to shoot some guy. He's in a dangerous part of town. And it took it took social media for people to show you. No, look at my phone. Look at the video. There's a guy actually being murdered. So there's something that I come out of it that's very good.
Yeah, that is one of the benefits of a more visual world, which certainly we're moving to, even online. We're moving more toward video now that, you know, we have the online speeds and bandwidth to support it. I don't know what that's. I don't know what that, how that bodes for our kids going through school, how they'll read.
They'll speak emoji. We're going back to hieroglyphics. The Egyptians got it right the first time. We're going back that way.
All right. So, but Twitter, I think, is possibly, well, it's actually. Trump is. I was going to say that Trump was sort of the more Trump. Twitter was the more revolutionary.
They're synonymous. In terms, Trump is Twitter. Twitter is Trump.
In terms,
war is fucking peace.
In terms of the election, this is the first time that a candidate was basically just going around the media. It's like what is the media like in every other election, you know, or whatever. I mean, there would always be this filter in place where the candidate would talk, and then there would be this lens that it would have to, you know, where there would be some sort of filter through the media before it would get to you.
And the news organizations. Should we start calling it that? Or are we just going to say the media?
Yeah.
Colloquially, well, the media to meet news organizations.
Yeah, I guess, yes. But Trump was just, with Twitter, he was just, he could just go around it. He could just speak to his millions of followers just in an instant. And it was like, you don't need to hold a press conference. You know, it's like, if you have Twitter, then who gives a shit?
That's something I guess, but I'm an old man who's not on Twitter, so.
And, you know, I find it odd that, you know, it was Hillary they were bashing for basically not holding a press conference, but she wasn't really using Twitter. Like, where was she? Where was she? I wonder, where the hell was she? If she wasn't on Twitter and she wasn't holding press conferences and she wasn't in Wisconsin and she wasn't in Michigan, where the hell was she? Damn it.
She was in her secret bunker directing attacks against Benghazi.
That's right. That's right.
She was giving
speeches to Goldman Sachs. Yes.
She was giving secret speeches to the Goldman Sachs cabal.
Yes.
The consortium of cabals, LTD, which is the trade name of Goldman Sachs.
Yeah. So I was watching the, there are basically two terrific programs on CNN every Sunday morning. The first is Fareed Zakaria GPS. I'm a big Fareed Zakaria fan. And the second is called Reliable Sources, where they sort of take a look at kind of how the news gets made each week. And it's just a fascinating show.
Let's stop here for just one second. I want you to continue on with both of those shows. But let's note that while I'm old and that I'm not on Twitter or Facebook, you're old in that you watch CNN.
Yes.
At the time the shows air.
Yeah, I mean, I record those shows. What are you talking about? I have a DVR. I don't watch any of that shit.
I was testing you. I wanted to see if you were offended. All right, so you're still under 35. Okay.
Yes. Jesus.
Watching TV on time. Fuck you.
Yeah. So they were having this this debate, and one of the guests they had on basically was saying that, you know, whether we do better reporting, whether, you know, it's like most people aren't looking at the Washington Post or New York Times. They get their information from YouTube, Facebook, and word of mouth.
Which is weird to me, because isn't YouTube and Facebook kind of the same thing as word of mouth? Like, people aren't going on YouTube and watching the CBS Evening News.
Well, you know? there's this, you know, Trump has his people are saying and I'm hearing thing. So
that word of mouth. A lot of Trump
alleged word of mouth.
Sorry, I'm stepping on your punchline. I apologize, but that actually made me think of something somewhat serious. I've been wrong about pretty much everything with Trump. I really didn't think he had a shot the first time. I was. Up until the very end, I was thinking, oh, he's not going to win it. He's not going to win it. Then right at the end, I thought, oh, man, this is going to be close. He might win. I really thought Hillary had it. But the one thing that I understood about him from the get-go was how effective that people are saying was.
Yeah.
Because I that's how a lot of people talk, liberal and conservative. But two, I grew up super conservative, and I don't know if it's because there's an essential distrust of the media when you're in like hardline evangelical Christian circles, but the media, there we go again.
Yes.
There's a mistrust of news organizations of almost any stripe when you're in that milieu. And yeah, people would talk like that. I was just used to it growing up. I don't know. It triggered something in me. I'm like, oh, that's effective. Like it's stupid, but like everyone was mocking it and I understood why they were mocking it, but it was the one time where I really understood Trump. I'm like, wow, that's going to be fucking effective. I'm not going to say it's smart exactly. but it's effective. It's like, I'm trying to think of an athletic metaphor.
Yeah,
he's a
master bullshitter. I mean, you have to hand it to him that
bullshit doesn't require a lot of technique. What I was going to get at is, it's like if you're in a basketball game and you're in a league that's really, really low down. I mean, like no one's really tracking this and you're just bigger than everybody else out there and you keep just shoving the other players down, sometimes even like picking them up and throwing them, injuring them horribly. You're just the biggest guy on the court. And the ref says, you got to stop, whistles you. And then you just punch the ref in the face, say, make me, fuck you. That's sort of what Trump is doing. There's a kind of brute intelligence to it. there's a kind of brute intelligence to it, but it doesn't require like abstract thought. And
no.
All it, what we need and what we've been missing is one, better players on the court, and two, referees that are armed with a little more than a whistle. Metaphorically. Sorry, I don't want to be the latest person since Trump started this thing where it's kind of cool to suggest that maybe you murder your political opponent. I don't want to be suggesting that. Nobody yes. murder anybody, please. Metaphorically.
So that leads into the book I wanted to mention during this episode, which is called President Obama recommended it to me.
That's what the book is called?
No, but he did recommend it to me via Fareed Zakaria GPS.
By the way, I would read that book. I would read President Obama recommended it to me. Well, yeah. I'll pick that up.
So the book is called Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. It is by, I believe this guy is Israeli. His name is Yuval Noah Harari. It's a fascinating look at how humans developed. I've read most of the part about kind of the pre-civilization aspect of humanity, which I realized I didn't really know a whole lot about. I mean, who does really? But really what separated, well, first of all, the humans have been around since about 1 million years or so. And they basically just, they kept spawning new species of humans. We were sometimes a little short-sighted about how we think of human beings, since there's only one species of humans, Homo sapiens, left, which is not a common occurrence, or not an occurrence that happens at all anywhere else on the planet, actually.
What do you mean by not a common occurrence? Like, what doesn't happen anywhere else on the planet?
Where there's only one species of a particular genus.
Okay.
So whereas, you know, Homo is the genus, and then sapiens is the species, right? Okay. So whereas about 100,000 years ago, there were different species of the Homo genus all over the, you know, what's known as the Old World. And then when sapiens evolved and sort of emerged from Kenya, basically all of the different human species evolved in the Kenyan area. And then spread elsewhere around the globe.
Distance running and coffee. That's what we're good at.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, as humans.
Then we proceeded to just go around and spread around the world and just totally wipe out the rest of the human species. So that now
there's those other humans.
And there's now only Homo sapiens left. And so why is it that happened? What made Homo sapiens so powerful that they were able to do that, and that they were
and that
Homo sapiens have been able to just live in this civilized way and basically take over the planet and possibly
destroy all other life on the planet.
You know, exterminate every natural resource potentially,
and nuke
the world and so forth. Hey, did you see that? What's his name? Stephen Hawking said that in about. Yes.
Who are you confusing him with? There's only one of that dude.
Yeah.
There's only one dude who's the early 90s Mac voice.
Yeah. He said that in 1,000 years that we'd have to likely go to another. We'd have to actually leave Earth.
And I was like, oh yeah, he said some crazy shit recently, which keeps me up at night on occasion. He has said that the thing that will keep us from surviving as a planet and a species to the point where we can get off world is probably artificial intelligence.
It's Trump? Oh, no.
No, it's not Trump. He thinks we'll survive Trump just fine. It's artificial intelligence.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, like he's worried about Skynet, and I have always been worried about Skynet. He's worried about the
thing that lets him speak with his eyes.
Right. Yeah, that is fucking scary. He's like, "I'll use it, but goddamn, this is the start. It's the beginning of the end." I have a friend who's a really, really brilliant economist, now an economics professor. I always introduced him as like an economics doctoral student, but nice. Now he's a fucking professor now. Oh, yeah, he's killing it. And he always mocks me for that. He always says, no, don't worry about Skynet. And then when I found out I had Stephen Hawking in my corner, I was very excited. I'm like, we're all going to die by Terminators. Fuck you. The conversation was a little more nuanced than that. Anyway.
Cool.
We've traveled a long way from the media and also from sapiens. Let's get back to sapiens.
Yes. So the question I drifted off from was, how were Homo sapiens able to just completely take over the world? like we essentially have as a species? And the answer is other species, even like ants, bugs, every other species you can think of pretty much, is able to transmit information. Homo sapiens were the first and so far only species that were able to transmit fictional information. And so,
I can promise you what the first fictional information was. It was, it's not you, it's me.
Yeah, so in other words, one of like the examples they give is they being the author, who's a he. One of the examples he gives is that if you know that if you can go, if you send a scout and that you can see that there's a lion around the corner, you can like report back to the tribe and be able to sort of paint this entire sketch in a way that you sort of can't if you can only you know, basically report factual information, right? If you can sort of like dress it up with this whole skeletal narrative framing, that actually becomes quite advantageous when it comes to coordinating attacks and working together cooperatively. The other part of that is you can kind of gossip, and you know, it's like you were saying with the people are saying thing, you know, he actually goes into gossiping and talking about things that don't really exist, right? Think about how many wars have been fought because of religion, or you know, how we all have these concepts of like we belong to a tribe or we belong to a country, these things that only exist in the abstract, and how powerful that is. If you can like be sent to war and
soon
fight,
America will literally only exist in the abstract.
Yeah, but like if you can
literally be an abstraction.
You can be sent to war and fight side by side with some guy that you've never met in your life, but you guys are united in cause and purpose somehow through this abstract concept of the country.
Well, we both probably like Steak and Shake, so that'll be a start.
Yes. Yes, that's a great reason to fight a war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, all right, I will die for this, dude. He also appreciates the engines of Obesia.
Yeah, and so the development of civilization has been sort of this, it's been kind of this management theory of thinking about how putting together like a military or something, how you have to kind of layer these different sort of managerial aspects in terms of like, okay, there's a platoon with a platoon leader, and then a company with a captain, and then I guess it's like a major with a battalion. I don't know.
Let's not go through every rank and classification.
Yes, military. But that's how you sort of that's how you can sort of structure everything, and only humans are able to actually do that. Chimpanzees are not; they're able to, like, I guess, kind of fight for their little kind of group of chimps or whatever. But they're not able to organize in that kind of fashion. And so, the reason why I wanted to bring all this up is this: the idea that what gives humans their edge over every other species is the ability to transmit fiction. I think that really played into how this election was covered. I think it played
back.
Into
we made it back.
It played into who won the election, and
no,
it was really unsettling just to kind of see all the fake news develop and spread like a virus over the internet, and just it was just very disconcerting.
Yeah,
your thoughts?
My first thought is that it's kind of a tragedy when you're talking about how humans can develop these national and regional identities while chimpanzees can't really do that. The real tragedy there is that the chimpanzees can roll deep, but they will never know that they are rolling deep. They'll never have hashtag squat up on any of their team pictures.
Right. So
I guess what I'm saying is I miss Harambe. Continue.
Yeah. I mean, another example would be if you have a monkey in front of you and a banana in your hand, you can try to get the...
Which I do frequently.
Yeah, I mean, you can try to get the monkey to do something for you, and you hold out the reward, which is the banana.
We said we wouldn't talk about this on air.
What is absolutely not possible is you cannot convince the monkey to go die for some cause in order to receive bananas in monkey heaven, right? That's just not going to happen. Whereas right now, there are many people, ISIS, looking at you, who promise their soldiers that if they die for their cause, that they will be promised, what is it, like 72 virgins or something in heaven?
I'm not really up on the ISIS manual, but yeah, I think you get goodies up in the afterlife. is the idea.
Yes.
Which, by the way, that sounds like a just a royal pain to me. I mean, how that's a lot of like, I don't know. It doesn't feel right. Is it supposed to feel like this? It just seems like it's more work than you want. I would like ask
we're talking about ISIS here, or
right? Like, okay. If I blow myself up, I want 72 like urbane, sophisticated, witty women with a repertoire of sexual knowledge that I have not yet been exposed to, but that they are willing to teach me. That's what I want. Yeah, it's a different thing. It's a cultural difference.
According to a new translation of the Quran, or I don't know if they get that from the Quran or if they get that from something else. But
we're way out of our depth here.
Yes, but yeah, apparently the new translation. I mean, this was written, 14 centuries ago or something. But apparently, what they think that it means now is 72 raisins, not 72 virgins.
We're going to have to take a cue from our description of this, journalism earlier to make sure that this is a real story.
No, I saw this on a Fareed Zakaria documentary called Why They Hate Us.
You didn't see it on your Facebook newsfeed?
I did not. It was a Muslim scholar who is Muslim herself who said that.
Wow. That's if that is in any way true, that would be a pretty bad translation error.
That would
they're like, guys, you still got to blow yourselves up. All right, take a knee, gang. We're gonna have to talk this one through.
That would be a pretty big disappointment once you get to paradise. If
I don't know, I mean,
you just find are pretty yeah, good. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. Okay, so we've gone from the dawn of time.
Yes.
To human's ability to lie. Human's ability to convince people to do things for strange, strange reasons.
So maybe that we should go into kind of the history of the news media and how it got to be sort of that biased, or at least ones that were catered to a particular market arose.
Okay. I think we should get into that.
Because I want to talk about the business and marketing of the media, because I think that plays a much bigger role than any of us really realize, including me. So
okay, well, we're gonna hit that, I think, on the other side of the break. I know we didn't plan to take a break here, but I also have to go to the bathroom badly.
Yes,
which I feel is one of the rigors of podcasting they don't tell you about.
We've been going for almost an hour, and
okay,
yeah, we're gonna have to split this into two episodes again.
Yep, happens every time.
Yeah, alrighty. Well, guys, we'll see you on the flip side. Check us out in part two. Break! Hey, guys. Thanks for checking out the show. This is Eric again. We have about an hour and a half of a show that we recorded after we got back to recording after taking the break here. So it could be that there's going to be two more episodes instead of just one based on those sessions. So I have to edit those together. I'll get to work doing that. Hopefully by the time you listen to this, the next episode will be available and you'll be able to just move right on into that one. But to close this one out, here's Elvis Costello again with the song called Waiting for the End of the World. This is from his first album, My Aim is True.
Somewhere like that, with a two-tone Bible and a spurt of cigarette. drowning as you stroll on the beach. But don't